welcome. Hi.
Welcome to Purter, She Wrote, the only cozy cat mystery podcast.
As far as we know.
I'm your host, Dana LaCoco.
And I'm your other host, Sunshine Lamontree. And we're here to talk to you about cozy cat mysteries.
So what's the difference between a cozy mystery and a regular mystery?
The amount of cozy.
And what exactly makes one of these books cozy?
So when you read a cozy mystery, it's like you've taken all the suspense of a mystery and you've stripped out the ugly parts. It's like you're sitting in front of a fireplace with a warm beverage. You're curled up. You've got a blanket and a cat nestled in your lap, purring. It's all those cozy things.
Unlike a regular mystery or true crime novel, which after you read one, you're like, I need to take a shower. That was messed up.
I'm going to rinse out my brain now.
These are devoid of violence or really vulgar, terrible happenings.
Allegedly.
I mean,
ish.
It's questionable. It's dialed back, but there are some extremely bizarre things that happen in these books.
For our very first episode, we are going to talk about Patricia Fry's Catnapped, a Klepto Cat Cozy Cat Mystery.
I'm happy to say that this is book one of a 28 and ongoing book series.
Patricia Fry, don't mess around. This woman has written so many books. She is prolific. She must have started as an infant because she has written something like 40 nonfiction books. And after that, she was like, you know what? I'm going to start my own publishing company and I'm just going to follow my dreams.
Way to go, Patricia.
I read her author bio. I pulled it from Amazon. I went to her website. I Googled this woman.
What did you find?
Well, she has a lot of information about herself. She's not hiding.
She's very wordy, and I think that expands into her novels as well.
I would agree with that. I think my favorite quote from her author bio is this particular section. Let me read it. The year was 2012. Patricia knew it was time for another career shift, and she asked herself, what writing dreams have not been fulfilled? The answer came in one word. And this word is in all caps.
Oh boy.
Fiction. That year, she gave herself a birthday gift, the time and space to write a novel. And boy, that is the gift that keeps on giving.
Truly, not only this novel, but it's 27 sequels. So we briefly mentioned at the top of the episode that we read Catnapped by Patricia Fry. Let's see, brief summary of this book.
Yes.
We've got Savannah who travels to the small town of Hammond to help her Aunt Marge after Aunt Marge busts her foot. However, while they're there, local cats begin to disappear and hijinks ensue.
They've got to solve a mystery. And so they do.
Yes. Now, this was a pretty strong debut novel for Patricia because she had a lot of 4 and 5 star ratings up on Amazon. People were generally loving it. Some people were loving it so much that they were moved to speak in tongues. Such as this reviewer, Joan Brayton, whose review is simply entitled Rags. After, of course,
the
Ragsdale,
cat.
The klepto cat.
The titular star.
Joan Brayton says, a great cat, love rags, love rags, love rags. Why do I have to have so many words? That is ridiculous. That's 4 stars.
4 stars. She didn't want to say as much as she did.
She loved it to the point that she lost all handle of the English language. So, I mean, that seems promising.
Overwhelmed with love.
And Judith, another 5-star reviewer, seems to support that by leaving a review that simply says, fine. So,
how many stars was that?
That was 5 stars.
Oh.
5 stars. She actually titled her review 5 stars and then clicked the 5 stars and then just typed all lowercase, fine.
I like her. A woman of few but fine words.
Judith knows that brevity is the soul of wit.
Something that Patricia Fry has obviously missed.
Totally. That brevity is not Patricia's specialty.
No.
However, there are some haters on this book.
Tell me.
We had some people that were not loving it.
Give me the tea.
I mean, some reviewers were quite put out by the fact that even though this is a cozy mystery, there was mention of maltreatment of cats.
Mm-hmm.
And things jumped very ugly at the end of this book with a spoiler of an attempted rape scene.
Yeah. So as far as coziness goes, this is definitely on the spectrum.
Yeah, it's a little racy. I mean, in terms of cozy mysteries, sure. Which is to say it's really, really no racier than like a PG-13 rated movie.
Yes.
But some reviewers took offense at this.
Fair.
One reviewer, JME4Pepens, leaves it one star. She says that there's cat abuse and neglect in this book, which she is not having. And she also says, my sister read the book. So I asked, does this book get better? It's depressing. She replied, not really. So, you know, for some people, this book was just a little too bleak.
Right, right. Depressing. Mm-hmm. She came here for the coziness.
She was not getting that coziness.
Mm-mm.
However, I would argue that this book really showcases all of the cozy mystery tropes that we've come to know and love. And I think we should take a closer look.
Let's whip out our cozy rubric and dive right in.
I feel like the cozy rubric needs a theme song.
It should have. Yeah, I like that. We should pick that up.
Yes.
The cozy rubric is something that we designed ourselves after reading.
Patent pending.
Do not steal that.
Yeah, no, that's our thing.
After reading several cozy cat mysteries, we realized that there are some recurring things.
There are some cliches that pop up in nearly every novel, and this is our way of organizing and looking out for all of those. This book leaned pretty heavily into those cozy cliches.
Yeah, most of them. It really ticks off the boxes as we go along. I mean, the first and most important element of the cozy rubric is the heroine.
Yes.
She's our guiding light, our North Star.
Right.
Mostly always a she.
For the most part.
Yeah.
And in this case, we've got one Savannah Jordan. And Savannah's about 30 years old. In the story, she lives in California, but she's come up to help her Aunt Marge after Aunt Marge takes a nasty spill and busts her foot.
Savannah is a lowly veterinarian assistant.
Truly. Although she's graduated veterinary school, she is not yet a full-fledged veterinarian. She's also fresh off of a breakup.
Right. She is so single, it's disgusting.
But lucky for her, she's gorgeous.
That way, she doesn't have to be funny or have a personality at all.
And she's got neither of those things. Holy smokes, she is so bland.
She couldn't make, like, a decision to save her life.
That's a big part of her character. Yeah, she's real bland. There was actually our lovely author, Patricia Fry, describes Savannah's character in the following way. Savannah, although certainly moved by conflicts between good and evil and right and wrong, generally weighed the consequences of her actions with a more precise scale than her younger sister did.
Savannah's moral compass is not at all nuanced.
Nope, it's basically the moral compass of a toddler or a lab monkey. She can determine things that are right and things that are wrong and generally picks the thing that is right and good.
Yes.
So while Savannah doesn't really have any personality to speak of other than she's just kind of a nice, pretty lady, she's got some busted taste in men. I think that maybe is her biggest character trait. Like we said, she's fresh off of a breakup with her ex, Travis. And while she's still single, she's got kind of a roving eye. There is a quote here. There was that professor, Jerry Barnes, at college. What an Adonis. And the man who comes into the clinic with those three bulldogs. Now he has a way of making me blush. He's handsome indeed. And what about Travis? He's certainly a 9.5 on any woman's hunkometer.
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 I love that despite being 30-ish, Savannah has the vocabulary and cadence of a much older woman.
You know, that is a common thing you'll see in pretty much all the characters in this book. But yeah, Savannah, not much of a personality. Boy, not, oof.
Yeah, she's like a, you know that quote about the empty vessel?
Yep.
Yeah, that's Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah.
Luckily, her Aunt Marge, with her broken ankle and her crutches and her being a 57-year-old woman, she's got enough personality for both of them, I think.
Aunt Marge is super feisty. She's not really one to think before she acts. Mm-mm. She just sort of charges headlong into any situation and sometimes tends to put her foot in her mouth for saying the wrong thing.
That's probably how she broke it.
You know, that might be. That might be. So she's here to basically meddle in everybody's business.
Yes.
Including her very single niece, Savannah's.
Yes.
And
to no one's benefit.
Hang out with all of the local cats in Hammond, USA.
Hammond, I mean,
we'll get to the town.
We're coming up to the town.
We actually don't know where it is. And hang out with her boo, Max, who we will also mention later.
We're circling back to Max as well.
So those are our two heroines. And again, because this is a cozy cat mystery, the second cozy cliche we're going to get to is, of course, the cats.
The cats. And in a cozy mystery, you can get anything from just your normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill cat. You love them. They mm-hmm. purr. They jump on stuff. They knock stuff over.
Sleep 18 hours a day.
They're cats.
Yeah.
But you can also get magical, genderless, divine beings who can bend the space-time continuum.
You sometimes get cats that are reincarnated people. However, in this book, we tended to get more run-of-the-mill cats, although they've got some quirks.
So Ragsdale is Savannah's cat, and he is a klepto cat, thus the name of the series, The Klepto Cat Mysteries.
Yes, he conveniently happens to steal things that more often than not prove crucial to solving the mysteries.
Or contribute to great comedic effect. For example, he loves to steal underwear. Sexy underwear.
Specifically, Aunt Marge's sexy underwear.
In case you didn't know, she was a virile old woman.
She's
bless her heart.
Yep. She might be 57, but she's still getting it in.
There's a quote she has that you're only as old as your hormones. And I'm like, are your hormones out of whack right now?
I mean, Aunt Marge is living her best life. And that is the source of most of the comedic scenes in this book is the cat stealing her underwear.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, Ragsdale the cat does tend to steal some useful things, as we'll see later on.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt Marge's cat also is a player in this book. That's Layla, the cat, who has quite an effect on Aunt Marge.
Layla is described, so she's like this beautiful Persian cat, like described as a ethereal beauty of a cat, right? Mm-hmm. But she has the personality of a vegetable.
Kind of like Savannah.
Much like Savannah. She's described as so mellow, it's almost like she had suffered brain damage.
Oh.
Direct quote.
Lovely.
So, like, oh, this cat is so chill. Maybe it's...
It possibly is a vegetable. So Aunt Marge and Savannah and their cats currently reside in a town called Hammond.
Hammond makes me think of Hammond, Indiana.
Which is not cozy.
Not even a little bit.
It's kind of just a regular town.
Yeah. Indiana.
Yeah. So, sorry. You lose cozy points there, Indiana. I've driven through you before, and you're not a great state. Sorry, not sorry.
No.
So, in the town of Hammond, possibly Indiana, somewhere in the continental U.S., we're missing a lot of the landmarks that make up most cozy towns. There's no main street. There's no yarn store. There's no annual town festival.
Bakeries and coffee shops and bookstores, the public library.
Right. It's kind of a blank space.
It's mostly a series of Victorian homes,
mm-hmm.
followed by a series of trashy homes.
Trailer park homes, yes. Followed by a series of abandoned horse ranches.
At least one abandoned horse ranch that isn't actually abandoned.
And certainly not on the up and up.
No.
The other notable thing about the city or town of Hammond, USA, is that it's seemingly overrun by cats.
There are cat hoarders. There are cat breeders. There are feral cat colonies, like multiple feral cat colonies. If there's anything wrong, especially explicitly wrong with Hammond, USA, it's that it is overrun with cats.
Seemingly, there are about 9 cats for every human occupant of Hammond.
The human occupants of Hammond, USA are in danger of being
they might be forced out.
They might be the cat apocalypse right around the corner.
Maybe that's what happens over the course of the next 27 books.
I hope so.
I hope so too.
If that's true, I would continue reading.
Yes.
If it was all of a sudden a post-apocalyptic world in which the cats had finally won.
Yeah.
Dial me in.
Yeah. Patricia Fry, please write that book. However, luckily for the abundance of feral cats in Hammond, there is the Hammond Cat Alliance, which brings us to our fourth tenant in our cozy rubric, the local weirdos that populate the town.
Any good town in a cozy cat mystery has an abundance of local weirdos, those eccentric characters that bring everything to life.
And in Hammond in particular, there is a cat alliance that, again, seemingly at least a third of the town is a sitting member of. And its beating heart, of course, is local busybody Aunt Marge.
Who surprisingly only has one cat. For, yeah. like, being the leader of this cat alliance in a town overrun by feral and pet cats.
You think she'd have more.
You would think so.
However, she's very active at a cat rescue. It just That's so happens true. Her neighbor / gentleman lover, Max, who is another member of the Cat Alliance, is running a cat rescue out of his home.
Max is amazing as far as local weirdos go. He's like this old dude who's retrofitted his house, his like Victorian
yes.
rich mansion house, to be like a cat amusement park for rescue cats. He's got carpet on the walls. He's got a catio. There are like cat entrances and exits all over. And he's very concerned about like the dangers of unmitigated cat breeding. He's like a repentant yes. former cat breeder.
And now he's all about adopt, don't shop.
He's, I would say, like evangelical about it.
Yes, I think that's a great way to describe him. The Hammond Cat Alliance meets at one point during this book because, as we mentioned, there's a number of cat nappings that have hit the town of Hammond, USA. And while some of the members of the Cat Alliance are not particularly concerned, Max is here to drop some knowledge on them about all of the horrible things.
7:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. the whole Cat Alliance assembled. He has a sermon to preach.
And I am so happy to share that sermon with you.
Please.
Max says, "Cats get accidentally locked in garages. They eat poisoned gophers and go somewhere to die. They're run over by cars. They climb into trucks, boxes, and packaging and wind up hundreds or thousands of miles away. And there are real abuses perpetrated on cats." He thought for a few moments before saying, "Rather than discuss that here today, I advise those of you who really want to know to search the internet. I can send you links to a couple of websites if you're interested." When no one spoke, Max added, "Not all cats are free to live a life of luxury. Not all people respect cats as pets. you have different cultures with different ways. Very racist. Not to mention cults and even unscrupulous scientists who use cats to suit their purposes. In larger cities, there are black markets for many things that are otherwise illegal, and cats being used for research is among them. Research the dark side of the cat world if you dare.
Dun, dun, dun. I love that he's convinced that in big cities, there's just this dark underworld of cat experimentation.
Yeah.
Like, those community college professors stealing cats out of their homes, out of their cat beds at night, and yep. performing crazy experiments on them.
Yeah, which actually is something that our charming heroine Savannah comes up with.
She seconds that theory.
She's very herself. Team Max when it comes to bonkers theories about the bad things that happen to cats.
I love that moment of silence when no one spoke up.
Yeah. They're like, wait, what?
They're like, dear God, I haven't even had my coffee yet.
It's 7:30 a.m. and we're having this Cat Welfare Alliance meeting. Like,
dude.
Read the room.
But that's Max for you. He's a total buzzkill.
Classic Max. However, I suppose he's a good foil to Aunt Marge and her feistiness. Maybe she's attracted to him because she just likes how much of a downer he is.
Yeah, she's totally into that.
I don't want to think too much about that relationship.
Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Another couple notable Cat Alliance members.
Yes.
There are the Gilberts, Betty, and her husband, Gil Gilbert.
They are described as like sort of like sporty nerd folk.
They remind me of the Portlandia couple that's always wearing hiking gear.
Yes.
And
They're both in Tevas or like Chaco yep. sandals, mm-hmm. maybe with socks underneath.
Definitely with socks underneath. It's Indiana. It's probably cold.
Like Bermuda shorts.
Mm-hmm. Cargo pants.
Yes.
But I just like that someone in this town is named Gilbert Gilbert. There's also the thin pregnant woman.
I had to like set my Kindle down and just like breathe for a moment. There's one woman, she's described as being like in her early 30s, and she's described as a thin pregnant woman. And I just want to take Patricia Fry aside and shake her vigorously.
Those two things shouldn't go together.
What do you mean she's a thin pregnant woman?
Is she just like a tiny stick woman with like a watermelon right. under her shirt?
Is she like a fragile bird woman who happens to be pregnant?
It's her a lot.
Face slender, but her stomach enormous? What do you mean she's a thin pregnant woman?
Whatever it means, she's got the time to show up at 7:30 a.m. to this Cat Alliance meeting and talk about her missing cat.
I love that one of the other founding members of the Cat Alliance wears like a rhinestone studded t-shirt yes. with like a cat on it. What's going on in Hammond?
I mean, people are obsessed with their cats. Honestly, people are obsessed with these cats for very bad ends, too, I would say.
Yeah. So it's not just the Hammond Cat Alliance. They're like, in Savannah's good versus evil, the mm-hmm. Hammond Cat Alliance is good. And then there's this evil sphere. The cat hoarders.
Oh, man. We got some cat hoarders in this book. I believe Max the Buzzkill at one point does mention the dangers of cat hoarding. But Aunt Marge, being very intrepid, puts two and two together and hypothesizes that the cats in town are going missing because hoarders are kidnapping them to run illegal cat rescues and internet scams where people donate to these cat rescues.
Basically like illicit GoFundMes right. where they're like, help Muffin.
Oh, Muffins is terribly ill. He needs money for medicine. But then they use the money for nefarious ends.
Like flat screen TVs.
Aunt Marge takes this into her own hands, and she's like, Savannah, come on, we're going to go do some reconnaissance at the pet store and see what we can learn. And lucky for them, the local Hammond USA pet store has the most helpful customer service representative on planet Earth.
Aunt Marge barges in, and she's like, excuse me, maybe you know my friend. My gosh, I can't remember her name, but she had a lot of cats, and she probably came in here all the time buying cat food for all of her cats. Who is she? What's her name? Where does she live?
And the pet store employee is like, you're thinking of Dora Lipton? Here's her address. She should be home right now. I hope you have a lovely day.
He's like, oh yeah, I know exactly who. Here you go.
Yes. And actually, the pet store employee's tip leads her to another eccentric weirdo, Dora Lipton, who runs a cat rescue on her own.
Dora Lipton has a helper.
Oh boy.
A 15-year-old girl with Down syndrome. And the way that this is expressed in the book is through the dialogue with actually written out lisp.
It is so freaking tasteless and offensive.
It's so condescending and terrible.
My notes here just say bad pea fry with multiple underlines. I don't know if Patricia Fry was like, you know, I'll add a character with Down syndrome to have diversity, but instead of like spelling out her sentences, she puts a TH where there should be an S. So Dora Lipton's helper at the cat rescue, this girl Charlotte, is saddled with this terrible dialogue that is like just, it's awful. It's and, like, Patricia, you can't do that. That's
and then
bad.
On top of that, the way that Dora, the character, speaks about Charlotte, oh, is also really terrible.
It's very patronizing. She's like, Charlotte's my best helper. She learned how to take the bus and clean a litter box. And it's like,
no one can clean a litter box like little Charlotte.
It's rude. It's just, it's bad.
I mean, it's like Charlotte's first line is, yes, I saw her outside. Hello, Miss Forstner.
Yeah, it's like,
and it's written out like that.
Patricia, you didn't need to go there.
And then, Dora put her arm around the girl and squeezed her shoulders. She's a wonderful help, and she has learned to ride the bus here all by herself. Before Dora could finish, Charlotte chimed in. Bus number 5. Get off at Oak and walk 2 blocks. And it goes on. It's not a better moment in this book.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a low point in this book. I sincerely hope that in the 27 sequels to this book, someone writes into Patricia Fry and is like, hey, listen.
Maybe you shouldn't represent people with Down syndrome in this way.
Yeah, because it's like really freaking offensive.
The other thing is like there's another set of hoarders. And so Dora is like, hey, Aunt Marge. I'm not the hoarder you're looking for.
No, I'm running a cat rescue, not cat hoarding.
But there are some cat hoarders down the street. Why don't you go check on them?
They're in the trailer park.
And Marge is like, heck yes.
Aunt Marge charges in to see what's going on with these hoarders. It does not matter that her foot is completely wrapped up in a cast. She knocks on this door. A guy opens it. She sticks her foot in. And I just have to read this scene.
Please do.
It is wild.
If you were looking at the same scene I'm looking at, we gotta read this.
Oh, yeah. Margaret could see an obese woman in a recliner chair drinking what appeared to be a giant-sized soda from a convenience store. There were cats of all colors, sizes, and shapes in the room. Some women want to know if we need anything for the cats, he reported. Hell no, we don't need nothing from no busybody women. Our cats are just fine.
And it's like,
every cliche you could think of,
all packed into this one little novel.
Got an obese woman in a recliner with her soda. There's a flat screen. There's a luxury car in the driveway. They've got a ton of mangy looking cats. And Aunt Marge is like, oh, this is internet fraud at the expense of innocent cats. These people are making a fraudulent GoFundMe and exploiting these cats for money. And you know what? Max was right. Like, this is the dark side of the cat world.
Yeah.
Savannah's like, my eyes are open. Oh, my goodness.
Heavens.
Yeah.
As far as, like, other town weirdos, there's, oh, my God. Should we talk about the youths?
Ugh. We should talk about the youths.
So, in Hammond, USA, right alongside all these catnappings and the Hammond Cat Alliance and the Hoarders, there's this subplot, right, of this old grungy dude who smells.
Mm-hmm.
And he wears a baseball cap and a flannel shirt.
Which is actually key to discovering who this bad guy is and his motivation. The fact that he is the only person in this town that wears a baseball cap and a flannel shirt.
Yes, that's how we know.
That is how we know that this guy is up to no good. Flannel and baseball cap.
He sure ain't wearing no rhinestones.
No.
That's all I have to say.
He does not have a rhinestone cat face shirt.
Or a mob blouse.
No.
Which is a favorite of Aunt March's.
And Savannah's.
And Savannah's.
She lends it to her.
Pleasant, peasant tops, you know.
Long skirts.
Long skirts.
No.
There's a lot of fashion in this book. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, there's... Oh, man, the fashion.
Okay, but so this old guy, right, in his grungy shirt and his baseball cap, we know he's up to no good because he's dressed like he's up to no good.
We don't get a name for him for most of the book, but we do get the names of his two teenage accomplices, Alex and Cody.
And Alex and Cody are out napping cats.
Yes, they are doing the dirty work of snatching these cats right off of porches and yards and bringing them to God knows where for what nefarious ends. But you know what? Alex and Cody, they just want to get paid. Because they're 14 and they got one thing on their mind, and that's partying.
Are they 14, though? Will you read me a scene of Alex and Cody?
I will read you a scene. Alex and Cody have been getting paid $10 each for every cat that they kidnap. And
it's a lousy commission.
It's true, but they're high school freshmen.
Sure,
so
okay.
They got nothing else going on. And on this fine day, after they have nabbed a few cats, they've both decided that they're going to buy cigarettes and beer. And they're thinking that the stinky, creepy, flannel-wearing old man that they work for kidnapping cats will purchase the cigarettes and beer for them. This also turns out to be like a very weirdly detailed scene where they're like, my dad won't buy us cigarettes and beer. Oh, mine won't either. But if the old man does, we can smoke it in our shed. It gets weird. But if you want to know what has made young Alex and Cody turn to a life of crime, here it is.
Lay it on me.
Money! Alex thought for a minute, then added with a devilish grin, you gotta say it's kinda a kick, the kind of work we do. Both boys laughed, and Alex jumped in the air and slapped Cody's hand for a jubilant high five.
Raise your hand if you've ever seen a couple of 14-year-old boys do a jubilant high five.
It's something out of an 80s sports movie montage. These kids are so stoked to buy their cigarettes and beer, and they're more than happy to cut school and kidnap cats.
All for the money.
All for the money.
This
is the dark side of Hammond, USA. This is the dark side of cat world.
This is the seedy underbelly of the cozy mystery world.
Truly. However, there's one thing in this book that I guess when Patricia Fry wrote it, she probably wanted this particular eccentric weirdo to be, you know, a character people enjoyed. We had the opposite reaction.
Are you talking about Dr. Michael Ivey?
I'm talking about none other than Dr. Michael Ivey.
I would stab him with an icicle if I could.
He is like...
I would stab him with any utensil handy.
Stranger danger. If you have a rape whistle, you should blow it.
Blow it now.
Get your pepper spray out. Terrifying.
Have your friend call you in the middle of the day. She has an emergency. You suddenly have food poisoning.
Don't go on a date with this guy.
Girl, get out.
You in danger. But if you want to guess who our heroine Savannah falls head over heels with, it's creepy, flippin' Dr. Michael Ivy.
So he's the town veterinarian. And do you have the quote where she first sees him?
I do. Let me find it.
Okay. So her Aunt Marge is all about Dr. Michael Ivy. They're like friends or something. Cat Alliance friends, I guess.
He is a part of the Hammond Cat Alliance.
No shock.
Now, Aunt Marge being the local busybody and also trying to support her boo thing, Max's cat rescue.
Right.
Drag Savannah to the vet's office to stop by, visit with Dr. Michael Ivy, and pick up some medication for some rando feral cats
that Max is fostering. She has such a broken foot that her niece has to drop everything, use all her PTO, and drive with her cat from California to Hammond, USA. But Max is like, oh, could you run some errands for me? And Aunt Marge is like, yeah, okay, of course.
A common thread in this book is that all of the men are terrible.
Right?
They're the worst.
Right?
And the worst of them, the king of the trash heap of the men of Hammond, USA, is Dr. Michael Ivy.
Yes.
However, when Savannah first lays eyes on him, this is all she can think. As if he isn't already an 11 on the appealing man scale, he's holding two adorable kittens.
Oh my God, hold on, there's more to it than that. So she's not just rating him on this appealing man scale, right? She's like, he's frighteningly gorgeous. Run away now or get your heart broken gorgeous. Like, her heart is skipping a beat, all the blood is rushing to her face. And I particularly like this quote from her. Even through his lab coat, I can tell he's buff. And look at that tan. Wow, is he an Olympic swimmer, she wondered. Certainly not a gymnast. Too dang masculine. Like,
none of those feminine gymnasts for me.
I don't know where to start. First of all, you can tell through his lab coat that he's buff.
Is he, like, hulking out of it?
Right. Like, is his lab coat possibly too small for him?
Is he just, like, flexing out of this lab coat?
Do you think that perhaps he ordered his lab coat a size too small in order to look as though he were hulking out of his lab coat?
That seems very on brand for Dr. Michael Ivy.
Second of all, is he an Olympic swimmer? What, just in the off season hanging out as a veterinarian in Hammond, USA?
I like that he's still maintaining a tan, even though they are in landlocked Hammond, USA.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. And I feel as though perhaps either Savannah or Patricia Fry has not recently taken a look at gymnasts.
Yeah.
They're masculine as heck.
Yeah. That is a tough sport. Those dudes are ripped.
Pure muscle.
Yeah.
No body fat.
Not even a little bit. So, I don't know about you, but I was picturing Dr. Michael Ivy to look like Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
But not like Good Will Hunting Matt Damon.
Right. The cute
like
one.
Creepy, talented Mr. Ripley Matt Damon.
Oh, that's exactly him.
Yeah.
Creepy Matt Damon.
Like, possibly murderous Matt Damon.
Gonna clobber you on the head in a rowboat on a, like, on a lake Matt Damon.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know if it was like, oh, the hair that falls into his eyes and his tan and his buff figure where he flexes out of lab coats. For some reason, I was just thinking Dr. Michael Ivy equals creepy Matt Damon.
I 100% agree with that. If there was anyone who was going to bring this character to life in a real creepy way, it would be creepy Matt Damon.
And, you know, a lot of the creepy stuff that Dr. Michael Ivy does, on the surface, to maybe a certain generation, could seem romantic, but to us, we were like, red flag, run away, this is bad.
Girl, pack up, start ghosting.
I would say one of the weirder things he does is when Savannah and Michael Ivy finally go on a date, he insists on driving her car.
Yeah, and so he makes this excuse like, oh, my veterinarian truck, it's a dump, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
But like, okay, if you don't want to drive your car, that's fine. And I get that Savannah is new to town, I guess.
You can like, just tell her where to turn.
Yeah.
Be like, so oh, I know how to get to Applebee's. No big deal.
In fact, you just give her, you know, we want to go to the Chili's downtown. And she can pop that into her GPS and figure it out.
But he's like, nope, move over. I'm driving.
Give me your keys.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and take the wheel.
Right. Also, he unclips her seatbelt at one point when they, like, pull into the parking lot.
Uh-uh.
Which is very strange to me.
And the whole time he's like, my God, your face in the moonlight.
You're just breathtaking. I've never seen such beauty. I mean, you know, Savannah's a good-looking girl, I guess, even though she's been wearing her aunt's, like, dumpy JCPenney clothes the whole time. But Michael is, like, creepy in the amount of compliments he showers on her.
This guy's already been married, too. Yes. Like, this isn't his first rodeo. He knows what he's angling for.
And, you know, he had to divorce his ex-wife because she didn't want children and went as far as to have an abortion when she was pregnant without telling him. So he's very wounded from that, clearly.
He's damaged goods. And yet...
And yet, he makes Savannah feel like total garbage about herself. You know, she's like, oh, Dr. Michael Ivy, he's a vet, and he's just doing such good for all of the cats in Hammond, but here I am, and I've been in a relationship with Travis, but we've broken up, and now I'm being showered in love by Dr. Michael Ivy, but I just don't know what to think, and I must be in the wrong for it. And it's like, girl, no, you just broke up with your long-term boyfriend, like, 2 weeks ago, and you've been on one date with this dude, and he's already dropping the L word? That's weird!
That's crazy town. That's not normal behavior.
Feel enormously free to go back to California and never return to Hammond, USA, because this guy is, like, way too creepy.
Write Aunt Marge and be like, is he going to be at Christmas? Because then I can't come.
Yeah. However, Savannah's like, nope, it's all good. Dr. Michael Ivy offers to Savannah, you know, hey, maybe you should stay in Hammond, USA. You can work at my vet clinic. And she's like, well, I'm not officially a veterinarian yet, you know. I still have to graduate.
He's like, oh, don't worry. I called your office where you work and your school, and I got your credentials, and I think you're qualified.
Sorry, what?
You did what?
Like, huh?
Excuse me?
Yeah, no. Don't do that. Don't do a background check for me on a job that I have not even applied to.
Exactly.
We've
known each other exactly 1 week. We spent like a total of maybe, what, like 6 hours together?
We went
maybe?
To Applebee's once and like operated on a cat once.
Yeah.
Because that's also his idea of romance. He's like, I've got a cat that's swallowed something it can't pass, and I really, really need an assistant at the vet's office.
Yeah,
tonight.
You like, want
to
come in?
You up? Yeah, hey. I think the worst thing, though, is that at the end of this book, and we're going to jump ahead for a little bit.
Yeah.
Savannah and Aunt Marge unravel the mystery of who's been kidnapping the cats and apparently horses.
So there's this whole thing.
Yeah.
It's Aunt Marge's nephew?
It's her relative.
Okay, it's a relative dude. So, right, we mentioned the old guy.
Smelly old man with the flannel.
And the baseball cap. Apparently, he was supposed to inherit some money from a grandpa, and he got written out of the will. He's a smoker, and that's very frowned upon in this particular Cozy Cat world.
Yeah, Ragsdale uncovers some of his cigarettes, which helps Aunt Marge and Savannah realize, oh, this stinky, creepy, teenage boy hiring weirdo who's stealing the cats is none other than Joe Forster, who is my dead husband's cousin who
tried to kill our grandfather in a fire.
To inherit my Victorian house. It is convoluted. Anyway, these two geniuses figure it out. Joe Forster rolls up at Aunt Marge's Victorian and is like, I'm kidnapping both of you ladies so I could murder you because you've uncovered my evil plan, which is to murder Aunt Marge so I can get her house, which I could then turn into a horse ranch because my current job is kidnapping horses. horses.
Kidnapping cats.
Cats.
To mouse a horse ranch where the horses are being sold to Canadian slaughterhouses.
But I love horses and want to open my own ranch, even though I'm currently working for a man whose livelihood is selling horses to Canadian slaughterhouses. What?
Excuse me?
It's so convoluted and wacky, but Creepy Joe takes Savannah to the scary horse ranch. And
he's got like a cabin. He like throws them into the cabin. He's like, yeah. I'm gonna gut you.
And he's like, ooh, you got a pretty mouth. I'm gonna, you know, do some bad stuff to you, Savannah. But then luckily the cops are all up and there's a shootout. And Joe Forrester's like, oh, good thing I got this tractor for, yes, you know, burying evidence, which I thought that was funny because it's like,
what evidence? Are you like killing the horses and burying them before the cops get you?
Also, it's a farm. Like, it's not that weird that you'd have a tractor.
You could just have a tractor. It doesn't need to be to bury the evidence.
He tries to drive the tractor, but he drives off a cliff.
He's trying to like push the cabin that Aunt Marge is in over a cliff, but he like misses.
He falls to his death. Everyone's like, oh great, he's dead. We can get the cats back to the people. And Dr. Michael Ivey apparently rides along with the cops for some reason.
He's like, I know a person there. Let me in.
And the cops are like, oh, of course.
Whatever you want, yeah, Dr. Michael Ivey.
No big deal. But he finds Savannah.
After she's nearly been raped.
And nearly been murdered by her crazy second cousin?
Something like that.
I don't know how they're related. This book did not make a lick of damn sense towards the end.
It's been a batshit day for Savannah. And as we all know, she can't deal with that shit.
She can't. But luckily, Dr. Michael Ivey bursts in and he's like, oh, thank goodness you're okay. And here's Savannah's reaction.
Oh, boy.
Finally, she was limber enough to wipe at her eyes. I must look a fright, she said, smiling weakly.
Oh, boy.
He returned her smile, smoothed her hair, and wrapped his arms around her. I've never seen a more beautiful sight.
Poor, pathetic Savannah.
Girl, you almost died, and you're apologizing to this dude because you look kind of messed up right now? Like, no!
Come on.
And then, to make matters worse, you know, within a half an hour of gathering up Savannah and Aunt Marge.
Right, so.
And all of the cats that have been kidnapped. Also, you know, Marge's boo thing, Max, was present on this ride along as well.
Right.
Because apparently, you know, if your girlfriend is
in a shootout, you're invited to go to the shootout.
The police are like, hey, come on.
Yeah.
Ride along.
You want to see what happens?
Yeah. So they're all piled into someone's truck with a bunch of yowling cats and Dr. Michael Ivey drops something on Savannah.
Right. So it's Aunt Marge and Buzzkill Max in the front seat. And by the way, didn't Buzzkill Max just ask Aunt Marge to marry him?
I believe he did. Actually, I think he had proposed to her earlier.
Oh.
And she was like, I don't know if I want to get married again. I've already been married twice.
And then dies.
And then after she almost died, she was like, yeah, actually, let's get married, Buzzkill Max. I'll help you run your cat rescue. It's great. Well, that inspires Dr. Michael Ivey to propose to Savannah, who he has known for 3 weeks.
Not even at this point.
In a car full of injured, malnourished, yowling cats, surrounded by her aunt and her aunt's weird fiance. And he's just like, oh, we should get married. You know, you should stay in Hammond's with me and work at my vet clinic and be my wife.
He's like, in a word, marriage. I think marriage is right for us. My dude, first of all, even if you did think that, not the time or place.
Read the room. She is surrounded by like yowling sick cats.
There's
she
like
almost
one on
got
her lap.
Raped and killed. Like, this is not the time to propose. This is not the time to be like, we had a great first date at Applebee's and nothing else. Also, we should get married. I am going to call your school and get your transcripts sent over. Like, you just need to live here forever. Yeah. I arranged it. It's fine.
How does she react to that, by the way?
She breaks down into tears and just cries into, like, this cat carrier.
I feel like she should take that as a sign. Like, if you get proposed to and the first thing you do is break into tears.
And then, like, happy tears, like, sad, what am I going to do now
softly
tears.
Softly weeping in the back of a Jeep Liberty surrounded. Surrounded by cats that have been stolen from their homes and are just also crying.
Yep.
Maybe no.
Yeah, maybe, like, I can't. You would think that this evening would end right there, but it drags on. Dr. Michael Ivey's like, Savannah, you and I need to figure this out. Let's go out to the diner.
Let's go to Denny's.
I'm going to tell you about my marriage that ended in divorce, and then you can come back to my place, and we're going to talk some more about our future. And she's just like, what?
I kind of like to take a shower first. And he's that cool?
No, we're talking about our future. And he tells her flat out, we did choose to spend time together this evening, and I have made up my mind that I would like to be married to you, to spend the rest of my life with you, and have children together. That's what I want more than anything right now.
And of course, it only matters what he wants.
Right. He's not like, I am so sorry that you were kidnapped today. That must be so hard.
It must have been very scary for you. Do you want to talk about your feelings?
Can I drop you off at your home where you are comfortable instead of my home where you've been to once because we've only known each other for 3 weeks?
Yeah.
And she's just like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think I got to go back to LA.
I got to sort my stuff out. Like,
yeah. And he's like, do you really think that, or are you just running away from your feelings?
He's like, I know you think you feel that, but your feelings are wrong. And even though that's what you think, it's only your truth. And my truth is better.
And my truth is that you should be my dutiful wife and bear me children.
And she's like, that's something to think about.
Yeah, not like...
Dana's currently holding up both of her middle fingers and waving them, which is accurate. That's how I feel inside as well.
Yeah, Savannah's like, oh boy, I gotta think about it, Michael. But, you know, I have used all of my PTO. I need to get back to my job.
And then
in California, where I live.
Savannah is obviously surrounded by a faulty network because she goes to her aunt's house and she's like, Aunt Marge, did you hear what happened? And Marge was like, yeah, you were in the backseat of my car. Yes, I heard what happened.
Yeah, I heard you got proposed to by creepy Matt Damon, and you didn't jump on that? excuse you, Savannah. I know you graduated from veterinary college, and that's great, but you're not a veterinarian yet. You're 30. You don't have children, and you're not married. Are you really living your best life? Because I don't think so.
Yeah.
I've been married 3 times. Or, well, rather, she's been married 2 times, but she's about to go
pending
for
the third.
Lucky number 3. She's like, I don't know. I think you should really reconsider. And what is Savannah's reaction to this knowledge that is dropped on her?
I hate her reaction so much. So that is, like, almost a verbatim quote from her aunt. And Savannah says, wow. All I can say, auntie, is, wow, that's something to think about, definitely. And she goes into this, like, am I living my best life? Has my cautious way of approaching the world held me back from living a true existence?
Should I marry this guy that I've known for 3 weeks? And by all means is super controlling and weird?
Am I totally empty inside because I'm not married and don't have children?
I am 30. OMG.
So,
You know, Savannah's also held back by this notion she holds about herself that I just have to read. The idea of marriage thrills me. I think the right man in a family will complete me. But I also think I'm, well, damaged goods.
My God, she dated one guy.
And it didn't work out.
And it didn't work out. And she's like, well, that's it. I'm useless now.
Who would take me now? And Aunt Marge is like, listen, you got to jump on Michael Ivey. Dudes like him are not single for long. But don't listen to me. Listen to your mom. Go back to California.
So she does, and her mom says the same shit.
Her mom says the exact same crap. She's like, wow, you know, your dad and I got married, like, right away, and it worked out great for
that.
Us.
We have 2 daughters, and, you know.
Life was swell.
And so then Savannah, oh my God.
She has a prophetic dream.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not just the women in her life that are steering her wrong.
It's her own goddamn self.
It's her own self. Do you want to read this prophetic dream?
Yes. She could see Michael in the distance. He held his hand out to her. She tried walking toward him, but with each step she took, she was farther away from him. He was disappearing into a crowd of beautiful women. In her last glimpse of him before he was out of sight, he had turned away from her and was walking through a tunnel with another woman.
Oh my God.
She called out to him, "Michael, Michael, don't leave me." But it was too late. The window of opportunity had closed for Savannah.
What does it mean?
What could it mean?
What could it mean?
My God, what do you think she will take away from that dream?
Well, lucky for us, we find out.
Right away.
Yes.
Savannah heads back from California, right? And she's got to go to her aunt Marge's wedding to Buzzkill Max.
That wedding turned around real quick.
They were like, you know what? We're old. Let's do it now.
We don't have time. We're going to do it. We're going to have it.
Right here on the catio.
Right here on the catio of our large Victorian house. We're getting married. So Savannah and her mom and sister roll up to Aunt Marge's wedding. And Michael Ivey is there, and he's like,
so fast.
Hello, Savannah. How are you? Oh, how have you been? And she's like, oh, I'm good. Oh, hey, Mom. Hey, sister. Let me introduce you to my fiancé, Dr. Michael Ivey.
Ah!
No!
Savannah, why?
Also, like, don't announce your engagement at someone else's wedding.
My notes spiral into madness at this point. I went off the rails because why would she do that at her Aunt Marge's wedding?
Wait, you tacky so-and-so. What's wrong with you?
Miss Manners is so disappointed.
She is spinning in her grave. She is going to come and haunt you.
Yeah. I bet you wore white too, didn't you?
She probably did wear white.
My God. Did you even bring a gift?
Ugh. No, it's my aunt. I don't have to bring a gift.
Right?
This book was a nightmare. And there are 27 more books in the series.
We did not read them.
We did not.
Probably won't.
You know, unless it takes the turn that we suggested earlier in the episode.
Cat apocalypse.
Yes.
That's the only thing that would keep me going.
But unfortunately, peeking at some of the Amazon descriptions, it sounds like Savannah and Michael Ivey lead a life of wedded bliss with their children, cats, and horses, solving
just
mysteries.
Gets worse and worse.
And I'm tapping out. I don't think she ever goes back to work after becoming a mom, and I've got some problems with that.
You don't think she becomes a partner veterinarian in Dr. Michael Ivey's veterinarian clinic?
Sunshine, who is going to care for their children?
Oh my God, you're right. She could never focus her attention in two places.
Yeah.
She does not have the bandwidth for that.
I don't think so. I mean, she has to choose between right and wrong at every juncture. So, pretty sure she's choosing
her children.
Yes.
I bet they're beautiful children, though.
I'm sure, because
beautiful,
Dr. Michael
empty
Ivey.
Children.
Beautiful empty children. With the bodies of Olympic swimmers.
Think about the dialogue for the children.
Oh my God.
We never even told you guys about the gardener. We can't go back now.
We can't.
But just think about Charlotte and make it as cliche as that. But
yeah, for Antonio
Hispanic.
The gardener.
Mm,
yeah, Antonio got bless. A oof, bad accents.
By the way, I mean, that's it for Catnapped.
That is it for Catnapped.
That's it for Patricia Fry.
Yeah, I think that is it for Patricia Fry. I'm not
prolific,
sure.
Prolific. The woman is a machine. She is wrote.
She puts out a new book every 3 to 4 months.
She writes so much.
So there's 28 Catnapped books total.
Honestly, I'm impressed. Like,
yeah.
My God, woman.
Perhaps one day we will give ourselves the gift of cozy cat fiction.
We can only dream.
Truly.
I guess we would like to thank you, fair listener.
Yes, for tuning in and sticking with us on this wild ride. We've got some more cozy mysteries in store, so go ahead and subscribe if you would like to hear more cat antics in the future.
That's right. rate, review, and subscribe. We are on iTunes. We are on
Stitcher. We're on pretty much all the major podcast platforms. And if you'd like to follow us on social media, our handle is @PerterSheWrotes on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Right, and that's Perter with two R's.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We love you, kittens.
We love you.
We love Cozy Cat Mysteries. They're ridiculous. And we love you.
It's going to be a crazy ride, and we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.